here, but I'll answer questions if you have any.
Mercy?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the importance or not importance of people gathering regularly in Baba's love?
I think it's very important. I think the world today being what it is, you almost need other people that you can talk to. But at the same time, I think it you can't withdraw from the world. You're not going to be any good to Baba if you do that. But you can come here and get your batteries recharged. Yeah.
What was the first thing, do you remember the first, you know, few words or thing that Baba told you when you first met him?
You want to know the first thing he told me? I'm writing a book about all of that. I hope it'll be out in the fall. I'll give you my daughters and my whole experiences with Baba right on through. But the first thing he said to me was, he told me that I was going to have to run the Sufi order, which was the last thing I ever wanted to do or expected to do. And I said to him, I was really angry, and I said, how am I going to do that with this machine? You see, my body, I was very ill. I had all kind of things the matter with it, you know. And Baba looked at me, and he said, can't remember the exact sequence, but he said, people want to always come here and dump their karma on me. And at that time, I didn't know what karma really was, because I hadn't had a chance. We didn't have Baba's books and things then. And I knew a great deal due to my Sufi training, but Anayat Khan, who brought the Sufi message to this country, never did talk about karma. He said it was a very controversial subject, and he had come to bring harmony, and so he avoided it as much as he possibly could. And then Baba looked at me, and he said, it's a long time since I've discussed the physical, but I will help you. So, of course, I hadn't any idea what he was talking about. It never dawned on me that he could do anything about this body. I just thought, well, he was going to see to it that maybe send somebody from India with me to help me out with his work he was giving me to do. Of course, I didn't then know how hard the work was going to be either. But the next day, he had given us, my daughter and me, the night before, he had told us, and he had told others, there was Elizabeth and Narina and Dr. Duncan, and he had sent for Dr. Ghani to come up from Pune to be there when I was there, made him a sort of a liaison with me because he was the head of the Sufis in Pune, great scholar. And Baba said, tonight, when we were about to have dinner, he said, tonight finish all the heavy things you want to talk about because tomorrow we're going to play. And we're not going to talk about anything heavy like God and wars and things like that. So we got out at this crack of dawn breakfast bit at Marizad, and we ate out in the garden. And first thing I knew, Dr. Duncan made some remark about the Russians, and Elizabeth or Narina answered it, and of course I might have pitched in, I can't remember. I was so this way all the time we were there. Sharma and I were there almost a week, and Gohar came running and said, looked at us sternly, and she said, Baba says you must have forgotten the instructions he gave you last night. And of course we all turned pink in the cheeks and were very sorry, and looked at our plates, and finally, we got ready and went over to the girl's house. He didn't have as big a house as he had later. And so there was a Elizabeth and Narina, and I sat here, and Charmin, and then with a big oval table, and then Baba sat on a gaudy over there, and the Indian girls were gathered near the door to the bedroom, and Baba looked at Charmin and he said, "Tell me a story." And if you think it is easy to tell a perfect master, we thought he was a perfect master then, a funny story at 8 o'clock in the morning. And knowing full well that he would be get the point or the punchline before you could get there. So Charmin told him a story. And I kept scrambling in my brain trying to think of what was I going to tell him. I just was sure he was going to ask me for one, too. So I finally cooked up one and told him, and he got us all in a real good mood. And then he said to Mara, "Perhaps Ivy would like to see your pictures." So she dutifully got up and got a box full of pictures and put them on this table. So I got up to look at the pictures, and with that, something hit me. Like a javelin, like somebody had thrown a javelin, knocked me right straight back into my chair. And I burst into tears, and my heart went like this, and oh, I was a mess. And they led me out and took me back to my room. But before they did, Baba came and kissed me on top of my head. Now, almost all my troubles had been due to a complete mix-up of glands. I can't tell you all the things I had to matter from. Neuritis and I had traveled with a chest full of medicines and shots and things. I threw them all away 3 days later, and for about 3 days I had I felt like I had a slight touch of the flu, and then after that I was just wonderful. And Baba always says he doesn't do any miracles. And people say, well, if you have faith, you know. I didn't have faith because I didn't know he was going to do it. And I only point this out that he did it because a master will do this if you have spiritual work to do. And he had given me a big job to do, and I couldn't possibly have done it if he hadn't straightened out my body. But I want to remind you that well, a master can, lessen. Mani puts it very well. She says he can lift the burden from your head to your shoulder. And he had done that by helping my body function. And then a year later, he let me break my leg. And a year later, he let me break the other leg. So, you see, I could function with those, but I couldn't function the way I was when I first went to them. So you have to realize that you don't get anything for nothing, even from a perfect master. He does what is necessary for you in order to get his work done and to help you in your forward progress. But of course, a healing is absolutely no good for anything unless it is a spiritual healing. And only great souls can give spiritual healing.
When groups like this meet in a community and they have recurring meetings, what should the contents of the meeting be? And if they want to do work in the community, what sort of work might they do? And do they need a center necessarily? And ought they to have a bookstore necessarily?
Oh, I think this all depends on the what the people themselves want and what they want to do. Baba never laid down any rules like that. The only rules Baba gave was that I remember he likes groups. I heard people say that Baba didn't like groups, but we have it down. I know Phyllis printed it, as she has printed so many wonderful things in The Awakener. Shouldn't be anybody who doesn't buy The Awakener. True though. You just stop and think what I said. 100 years from now, what's going to be more valuable other than Baba's books and a thing like The Awakener? People will be hunting for every word that Baba ever said, and she has things in there that haven't been printed elsewhere. Now you've got me off the track. Oh, Baba had a big showdown in Myrtle Beach in 1956. We had all gone down to the barn with him. You've seen these interminable pictures of where we went to the barn, we came back from the barn, and so forth. And this time, Baba sat down in the grass near a tree right in front of where the old dining hall was. Now, they have a new one now, I mean as well, but this was where the old one was. And he had us all sit down around him, and so we all gathered there. And all of a sudden, Baba looked at me. I was quite a ways from him, about as far as those boys are. He said, "Ivy, how'd you like to have a good fight today?" He made like he was rolling up his sleeve, you see. And I looked out. I stood up when he addressed me. I hadn't any idea what he was going to say. You never did know what was going to happen next anyway with Baba. So Baba gave quite a little talk about the values of Sufi order, which he himself had subscribed to, and then there was a good deal of talk as to whether or not there should be groups, and then I had moved from New York then, and there were one or two New York people there who had been with my group, and they said, "Well, we miss the Mershta so much, and can't we go to the Monday night group?" And Baba said, "You may visit there, but you shouldn't keep going there." He said, "Or if you want to change, then stay with it." He said, don't go back and forth between the groups, belonging to one and going to the other. He said, stick to one and let it be that. But I mean, we really had, there was a lot more to it, but we really had a very good talk about groups. And Baba said that in the world today, when you have all the considerations we have, I mean, you have to have, in this country particularly, everybody wants to be able to give to something that's tax deductible, and so you get into the corporation structure. I explained this to Baba years ago with regard to Myrtle Beach. They finally did have it incorporated, but at that time, it wasn't. And he was infinitely practical about everything, just about everything. But when they had that big showdown in Andhra, and that has been written up and handed out 1,000 times, Baba's warning to his lovers. The point that Baba made there was that if you wanted to do some work for him, you shouldn't take on more than you can do. In other words, he said you shouldn't start something and then expect a lot of other people to pay for it unless they had agreed to do this. And in this case, what had happened to him? The man had... you remember Phyllis?
They were soliciting money.
Yeah, the man had these great big plans, and they went from one place to place, and they solicited a lot of money each place in order to pay for the expenses. And it was just done in the wrong way. It can be done in the right way, but that time it wasn't done that way, and Bob was very displeased with it, and he just suspended everything.
Much of it was coming from people that I remember.
Yes, because they were he was demanding a great deal of money from people who just didn't have that much money to give, and it's very hard. Actually, we in the Sufi order, you know, our Sufi order was started in San Francisco in 1910, and it's been in existence ever since. And in the old days, we used to have dues. The dues were very nominal, and they were for being able to do these papers and lessons and stuff that always had to be typed and handed out and so forth. But Baba said, none of that. He said, everything must be voluntary. If it doesn't come from the heart, it isn't of any use. And actually, one time he sent Dr. Duncan over to this country to ask for money to help buy the cloth and the grains and things that he wanted to give the poor at a certain time. And since we lived in New York, Dr. Duncan came, I guess you were there then too, weren't you, Phyllis? Yes, when he came to New York, and we were the first to learn about this. So a number said, well, fine, we'll give some bridge luncheons and things and get everybody to give something, you see. And Dr. Duncan said, oh, no. He said, Baba said, nobody. He won't accept money from anybody except that it's given in love. And that really made it quite hard, you know, to raise the money. But he said he had to. What he wanted the money for was not only to buy the good, but he could use the love part to help these people that he was giving the goods and the grain to. So what you do in any given community, Baba never told us we had to keep bookstores or anything else. And if you do, I think you just have to do the worrying with it and have enough volunteers who want to do it before you ever enter into such projects. It's very difficult.
I was just going to say that Rishta, when the new people come into the Sufi order, they always come up against a certain thing that happens. Sooner or later, there is a tremendous white light that appears in the middle of their head that comes up as a bright new idea, you know, this is something that we've got to do, and they come running into Mershta and say, you know, gee, I just had the most marvelous idea, and wouldn't it be wonderful if we did so-and-so? And Mershta always looks at them very calmly, well, some of the time at least, and says, why, that sounds lovely, dear, why don't you do it? They come out the door, and then there's, do you suppose she means I should do it?
Exactly.
Pretty quickly, yeah. We all learned to put up or shut up.
I brought Sherbin down because I felt that, among other things, because I enjoy having my children with me, but I got to thinking about it that Phyllis, of course, isn't as old as I am by any means, but we of my vintage, Margaret Kraske is now 80, we won't be with you too much longer. So I told her she'll be among the next level of people who grew up with Baba, and she'll have to be coming down here telling all your children, perhaps, what it was like to be with Baba. But she went with me that first trip. She was just 18 at that time, and she went through as much as I did under Baba, but of course we all had different things that we had to do. Believe me, he always gave us instructions and things, and I remember, among other things, that he told Charmin, of course in college, he was in college where the food wasn't very good anyway, and he told her she couldn't have any butter or any pastry or any bread or almost anything, and I had visions of her just melting away. Really, I was scared. But I think he knew her capacity for putting on weight. And another year he told her, for 1 year you may not kiss a boy. And when you're going to college, if you think that's easy. We all had our little things that we had to do. He kept us remembering him. Perhaps you'd like to hear some of the crazy things that happened during our play.
Yeah.
I think that it's a very good example of the fact that when you work for Baba, you can expect all hell to break out. This is the period when the Mayavik forces are loose and are really out to try you to the utmost. You see, Baba told us years ago, I think it was in 58, wasn't it, Phyllis, about how we were all going to be tried?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And Baba said, we were just a few of us sitting with him in that little lagoon cabin, and Baba said, do you think that you would stick with me if seven serpents jumped through into this room all of a sudden? He said, you wouldn't. He said, you'd be dashing out the windows and doors as fast as you could get there. He said, this is the way it's going to happen. All of you, everyone will be tested according to their own particular weakness. And when he first said it, we kind of thought, well, something dreadful is going to happen, but we're all going to be strong and stand up for Baba. And then it dawned on us, it was each person's weakness. And I have been watching that for the last several years, and I am unendingly surprised, no matter how well I know my students, when their particular weakness suddenly goes through the mill, because many times it's something I didn't expect. We had one boy commit suicide, and this boy was very dear to me and to many of us. And he was the last person I ever would have thought would do this. And why did he do it? Because he couldn't take failure. He had been asked to give up his class in the school where he was teaching. It was too bad because it was his first real class. He had done substitute teaching. And the class that he had was for a Catholic school for girls who were delinquents, and he couldn't keep them in order. So they thought he wasn't strong enough to do it, so they asked him to give up the class. I talked with him a number of times. I had him in my house. I told him about people like, Darwin, you know, Darwin's family was told that they better put him in the ministry because he didn't have brains enough to do anything else. And you remember Walt Disney lost his first job at the age of 17. They were sure he was never going to amount to anything. And I told him about all these things. I said all the great men I had ever known, many times, they had three or four different careers in their lifetime. And suddenly one night he jumped off a high trestle. I couldn't believe it, but he just couldn't take that failure. And so we all have hidden weaknesses that we have to fight, every single one. And the thing comes up very suddenly and surprisingly. A number of our students who have had money are wiped out right now. Some who've been very busy have gotten too ill to work. There have been the strangest things happening, just like a complete reversal. And we have to keep cheerful and doing our best regardless. We must do it. We must do it if we're going to win through. Otherwise, we have to wait another 700 years. And who wants that? Mm-hmm. Did you get a note or did somebody ask something?
Mm-hmm. It was a private note.
Oh.
I wonder if you'd explain to me, it puzzled me a little about those two broken legs. You don't feel that he would have anything to do
Oh, no, that's him. Karma. Oh, no. The lady asked about my two broken legs. No, that's karma. That was something that I was to go through. And apparently the other illness was something I should have gone through too, you see. But Baba relieved me of going through that one because I had work to do and I couldn't do it when I was ill. But when the karma showed up with the broken legs, why, he let me go through that. Actually, I remember him saying one time, when he asked Sherman to go to Europe with him, he all of a sudden he looked at me and he said, Sherman has to be very, very sick next spring. And I knew this because I had studied astrology and worked with it, and in fact, I had been kind of dreading this period, not knowing just what was going to happen. And then he looked at me again, he said, I will take care of it. So she went on this trip with Baba, and she was sick the entire time, just absolutely, just like she had, just like a low-grade fever, day after day after day. Well, sometimes you go through this sort of, it's a sort of a draining experience. Would you call it that, Phyllis? When you're with Baba. It's like he just extracts the life out of you, like you took water out of a sponge. And you get to where you're so tired and so sick. And that's one of his ways of working. You see, when you get that awful feeling where you can hardly crawl and you're tired and exhausted, then you just give up and you say, well, all right, Baba, you just do what you want to do. It's a real technique. And he used it to the full. He really did. But anyway, Sherman on this trip was sick every day. And she carried on, and she told me afterwards that when he was ready for her to leave, she left Switzerland and came back to England, and she asked him if she could go visit Scotland for a few days, and he said yes, because usually Baba sends you right home like that whenever you've been with him. He kind of gives you a, we used to say he gave you a little charge, you know, to take along so that other people could feel him when you were with him, when you first came from him. It seemed like that. And so she went to Scotland, and she said every day she got sicker. And the very last day, she was only there a few days, she said she got off the train and went into a little place to stay for the night. And she said she went downstairs. It had been raining all day. She was wet and miserable and could hardly breathe, and she decided she was going to be dead before morning. So like the convicts do, you know, before they get executed, she decided to have a real good dinner and a little bottle of wine to get warm. And the next morning, which was when she was leaving, she felt fine. She came home perfectly good health. And I had Jean Adriel tell me the same thing, that when she and Delia went to India, Sherman and I went to the end of 47. It was really the first week of 48 that we were there. And that October, Jean Adriel and Delia went. And Jean said that they were sick every day. And when they finally got back to England, just as the ship was pulling in, she said she began to feel, she revived and she felt all right. Baba I remember so well, when I was with him, so often he would, if he passed me or came up behind me, he would run his hands over my back or my shoulder, like just like he was dusting me off, you know. And of course, I just felt worse and worse. And it wasn't for years that I really realized that he was brushing away some of these old cobwebby sanskaras. But I keep saying, you never get anything for nothing. And as soon as everybody gets that in their mind, then I think they'll live better and behave better and try to earn Baba's grace, although you can't earn his grace either. It's impossible. But try to win it by your love, because he just can't resist love. All right?